Converge on the DMV and want you to know more about food sustainability and the loss of farmland. A champion of media diversity joins the ancestors, and activists get ready to take on AIPAC and the Israeli Prime Minister when he visits his right-wing colleagues in Congress next week. All that and more is coming up next. Welcome to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for February 26, 2015. I'm Esther Averam.
C. Murphy.
And we're here on our final day for the extended winter fun drive with a jam-packed show for you all about activists and activism on our dear planet. We're going to the recent gathering here of black farmers for issues of food and sustainability. And we'll be talking about movies and media and art for the fourth Thursday of the month. You can get us started on our final show for the fun drive by calling 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739 or pledging right online at WPFW.org. I think a lot of people are home today. They didn't have to go to work. Maybe this is the first time you're hearing the show, but this is On the Ground and we're all about activists and activism. My special gift for today for our show on arts, media, and activism is my book, We Gotta Have It, 20 Years of Seeing Black at the Movies, which includes more than 400 reviews and essays about movies, starting with the launch of Spike Lee's career and the new wave of black film in 1986. If you're a movie lover, if you'd like to stroll down memory lane, I think if you like the movies and, you know, you like to think about the impact that movies have on us, I think this is a book you'll enjoy. And so I want to thank all of those who have helped to make our goal for the 3 weeks in a row. And we want to go out in good style today on this extended week for the drive. On the ground is the justice in the Jazz and Justice mission of WPFW and the reason why Pacifica was founded. And we want to uphold that. So we have a lot for you today. And we're going to start with our headlines, Lucy.
The FCC's pivotal role on net neutrality is today. Leading up to the vote, civil rights and media justice organizations across the United States have continued to stress the importance of a free and open internet to communities of color and other communities lacking access to media. In partnership with the Media Action Grassroots Network, media activists say that recent cases of police abuse and killings, which have been verified and publicized by showing video online, are also examples of how a free and open internet can be a matter of life or death. Media activist Tim Wu said in a recent address that public concern over the issues of economic inequality, the limiting of the internet as an open frontier, and a suspicion about growing power in private hands have all contributed to a record-breaking 4 million people writing to the FCC to oppose slow and fast lanes on the internet.
I think regardless of who you are or even where you stand in the socioeconomic class, the issue of inequality has become intolerable to those of us who consider us devoted to a republic that wants to explore or is founded on the idea of equality. And I think the very premise that the public infrastructure of the internet, built by the government, you know, and this basic network, which everyone rely, I mean, unless, you know, some people ignore it, but let's say most of us have come to rely on day to day, the idea that that could be divided between rich lanes and poor lanes, slow lanes and fast lanes based on ability to pay. To me, it's as if you have a fast lane and slow lane on the sidewalk or something. People have a craving for at least some of public space to remain equal to all of us.
Some wireless companies are pushing back on the proposed new rules, but the FCC chair Tom Wheeler says that net neutrality must be applied to mobile devices and services as well.
President Obama has vetoed a Republican bill approving the Keystone XL tar sands oil pipeline. Senate Republicans say they will try to override Obama's veto, but they do not appear to have enough votes. Also in environmental news this week, 20 protesters who call themselves the Cove Point Protectors went on trial in Calvert County District Court for actions last November and December to raise awareness and build resistance to a new gas refinery, liquefaction train, power plant, and export terminal being built by Dominion Resources in the neighborhood of Cove Point in Southern Maryland. The group was charged with 20 counts of trespass, 20 counts of failure to obey a lawful order, and 2 counts of disorderly conduct. In the end, the defendants were found guilty on less than half the charges, but everyone was found guilty on one charge. All defendants except the few that accepted a STET agreement were given a 20-day suspended sentence, 3 years of probation, and a $157 fine. About half of the defendants were prepared to serve time in jail rather than to go on probation or pay a fine. This option was given to a similar defendant a few days before, but the judge denied it to others. One defendant, Steve Norris, was also sentenced to serve 5 days in jail because of his previous record of minor trespass. Steve Norris spoke to a video producer, Kelsey Erickson, before Monday's hearing.
My name's Steve Norris. I live in Asheville, North Carolina, about 500 miles from here. I came here and was arrested because I thought it was an important point to make about how important this export terminal is that Dominion wants to build on the Chesapeake Bay right here, which is right out here behind me. There are many reasons why I think this is important enough to travel 500 miles here to get involved with a local community. My primary concern is that I am really very scared of climate change and what climate change is may do to the planet. I have children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and kind of wonder what kind of planet they will inherit unless we stop things like this export terminal from being built.
To connect with the Cove Point organizers, go to wearecovepoint.org.
One of the top scientists involved in denying climate change has failed to disclose his extensive funding from the fossil fuel industry. Dr. Wei Hock Soon of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics has downplayed global warming and rejected human activity as its cause, arguing the sun is more responsible than greenhouse gases. Climate denialists frequently cite his work to reject concrete action. But documents released by Greenpeace show Soon has received more than $1.2 million from fossil fuel corporations over the last decade and failed to disclose those ties in most of his scientific papers. According to the New York Times, Soon's hidden financial ties likely violate ethical guidelines in at least 8 different cases. In correspondence with his funders, Soon referred to his scientific papers or congressional testimony as deliverables. In response, the Harvard Smithsonian Center says Soon's behavior is inappropriate and will be handled internally.
And as President Obama continues to press for the closure of Guantanamo Bay prison in Cuba, a former Guantanamo Bay interrogator involved in torture was also a longtime Chicago police officer known for abusing people of color. According to The Guardian, Richard Zulli spent 3 decades as a notoriously brutal detective on the Chicago police force. From 1977 to 2007, Zulli used tactics including torture, threats, and abuse to elicit confessions from suspects, the majority of whom were not white. One of those confessions was later ruled to be false, and the sentence was vacated. Zulli's methods included shackling suspects to walls through eye bolts for several hours, allegedly planting evidence, and issuing threats of harm to family members and sentences of the death penalty unless a suspect confessed. Zulli was also accused of brutal methods at Guantanamo Bay, where he was a reserve officer in charge of interrogating a prisoner who said he made a false confession due to torture.
The Justice Department will not file charges against George Zimmerman for the death of Trayvon Martin, but it is reportedly prepared to sue Ferguson, Missouri Police Department if it does not address racial bias in its practices. According to CNN, outgoing Attorney General Eric Holder will announce the findings of a federal probe in coming weeks before he steps down. The Justice Department is expected to accuse the Ferguson Police Force of a history of systemic bias, backing the claims of a recent lawsuit that said local officials have targeted people of color with arrests, tickets, and fines.
And starting this Saturday, February 28th through Tuesday, March 3rd, a coalition of organizations, including Code Pink, are planning a series of protests, teach-ins, and other events to demonstrate the links between state-sponsored violence and racist police at home and abroad. Whether the motto is hashtag Free Palestine or hashtag Black Lives Matter, organizers are calling for unity among movements to call for an end to global militarism and the plague of racism. They will be protesting against the annual meeting of APEC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, that supports the brutal occupation of Palestine and that is trying to push the U.S. into war with Iran. Organizers say that racism is the force that both helped to create and now helps to sustain and justify the brutal occupation of Palestine and the accompanying police state. And they are connecting the dots to the Fergusons of the U.S. In a recent trip to Palestine, activists from the Black Lives Matter movement were able to witness firsthand the effects of Israeli apartheid and occupation and did a solidarity demonstration there as a call for support of the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions BDS campaign.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it's won.
You ready?
Yeah, we are.
We ready.
We ready.
Okay. We came here to Palestine to stand in love and revolutionary struggle with our brothers and sisters. We come to a land that has been stolen by greed and destroyed by hate. We come here and we learn laws that have been co-signed in ink but written in the blood of the innocent. And we stand next to people who continue to courageously struggle and resist the occupation. People continue to dream and fight for freedom. From Ferguson to Palestine, the struggle for freedom continues.
Palestine to Ferguson in the occupation. Ferguson to Palestine, we fight to free our nations. Ferguson in the occupation. Ferguson to Palestine, we fight to save our nation. Palestine to Ferguson in the occupation. Ferguson
to
Palestine, we fight to save our nation.
Viva, 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 Palestina.
Palestine,
hurrah, hurrah. Palestine, hurrah, hurrah.
Voices of those participating in the solidarity demonstration in Palestine included Charlene Carruthers, National Director of the Black Youth Project 100 and Dream Defenders Executive Director Philip Agnew, Ferguson Hands Up United organizer Tef Poe, and journalist Mark Lamont Hill. For information on civil disobedience actions or to become an organizational endorser for this weekend's events opposing APEC and Netanyahu's visit, contact Anna at codepink.org and also visit codepink.org. And those are our headlines and happenings. When we come back, black farmers from around the country gather here in the DMV. And before we go to our little break, I want to remind you that to call 202-588-9739. Let us know you appreciate us going the extra mile. And go the extra mile with us with your community-controlled media. Dial 202-588-9739 or pledge right online. A lot of folks are home today, and we need your support in this last mile of the fund drive. Since we lost launched last May on the ground. We have brought live coverage and voices from the streets of the DMV and elsewhere on the pertinent issues of the day, interviewing protesters outside the FCC on the National Mall with an environmentalist opposing the construction of the Cove Point liquefied natural gas facility at Cove Point. And we've been in New York at the People's Climate March, on the streets with D.C. Ferguson as they shut down Chinatown. All over, we've been bringing voices from the streets to the airways of WPFW. So I know you appreciate the effort, and this is the time when we get our feedback from you, and you can give that by supporting the show, supporting WPFW by calling 202-588-9739 or pledging right online at WPFW.org. All right, so those are headlines and happenings, and we'll be right back.
Somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. We aren't gonna let any dogs or water hoses turn us around. We aren't gonna let any injunction turn us around.
We're young, we're strong, we're much loved right now. We're young, we're strong, we're much loved right now. We're young, we're strong, we're much loved right now. We're young, we're strong, we're much loved right now. We're up, we're strong, we're marching all night long. We're young, we're
strong, we're marching all night long. African American people are becoming a landless people in the United States. We continue to lose the land and wealth that our parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents worked, fought, and died to acquire to be able to participate in the American dream. We owe our ancestral warriors a debt and our youth an opportunity to continue this legacy, sustain this economic base, and afford them safe and healthy food. USDA has not helped us, and certainly the courts have proven more devastating than we ever dare thought. We must help ourselves by ensuring that the next generation is ready to maintain and conserve the land. So was the public statement of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association and Land Loss Fund, which just met here in the DMV. Michael Byfield filed this report.
The continuing loss of black land, as well as the impact of industrialized farming practices by multinational corporations, were among the issues addressed at a two-day forum sponsored by the Black Farmers Association and the Howard University Department of Political Science. The event was well attended by many who braved the frigid temperatures on Friday and the snow on Saturday. The forum presented a wide swath of panelists, farmers, educators, students, and community activists, with a central discussion around black loss of land. The historic Pigford case, where black farmers settled a class action lawsuit against the USDA for discrimination for $1 billion, was distributed to 13,300 farmers, with some additional 70,000 black farmers who filed late seeking compensation. In 2010, following the Shirley Sherrod embarrassment of the USDA and the Obama administration, Congress appropriated an additional $1.2 billion in a second settlement called the Pigford II. Many of the speakers talked about the role of racism and discrimination and how it played a role in depriving blacks from participating fully in the American economy. The keynote speaker, Pete Daniel, a retired senior curator at the Smithsonian Museum, spoke about the effects of how dispossession and loss of land affected blacks in the civil rights era. Law professor Cassandra Jones Harvard of the University of Baltimore spoke about how land loss by blacks created white spaces and how it was that this tied into today's present-day gentrification. Professor Michael Stewart, a PhD candidate who was instrumental in coordinating the forum, spoke about the history of land loss and its impact and some of the bright spots and successes from the civil rights movement.
Many of y'all may not know or may not be familiar with it, but social movement theory is a relatively new phenomenon in the academic or scholastic community. When I say relatively new, I believe it kind of really took shape in the wake of the civil rights movement. Many writers like Doug McAdams, Sidney Tarrow, Charles Tilly, and the sort, they kind of talk about the dynamics of contention. They talk about social movement, the movement protest, or the strengths of a protest, social power. But a lot of that research dealt with the interaction from a siloed disciplinary perspective, meaning they looked particularly at social engagement, individuals collectively working together. What my research says, well, I see that, and I respect that, I understand that, but I'm trying to figure out whether or not that collective action actually gives us an impactful change, actually provides success, or gives us success. The reason why many of the resource mobilization social movement theorists kind of grew is because it's easy to see with what dollars we have, what are we able to do with it. But what's more difficult is how do we measure and define success of that movement? And so what I have the benefit of, as well as you guys have, is the benefit of time. And that time is, in 1973, folks were trying to figure out what the issue was. Where are the black farmers? What happened with the civil rights movement? We were trying to document. So we started getting data sets being built. The Census Bureau methodology of counting the nation started to change and become a lot better. So we started to build this resource of data, which made for generations to come, research to be a lot more easy to analyze. Well, with Mr. Brown, with Dr. Brown and his emergency, what is called the Black Economic Research Center, which is based out in Harlem, he had an arm of it called the Emergency Land Fund, probably one of the first. But from that, Clark University gave them a grant. Well, Ford gave them a grant and was kind of hosted at Clark University. Ford Foundation gave them a grant, hosted at Clark University. And they said, I want to study this black land issue. What happened to farms? We say about the civil rights movement, we got our freedom, so to speak. That's what they say. I don't think it's freedom, but we got our freedom to vote, our enfranchisement. We got our civil rights, so to speak. But why is it that more black people today seem to be impoverished than what we, meaning aren't able to feed themselves as they were, you know, during the pre-civil rights era?
Professor Zelia Wiley, Assistant Dean of Diversity at Kansas State, highlighted the need for education in agricultural engineering and spoke about her family history, where her great-grandfather bought the plantation where he had worked as a slave and sharecropper in Tyler, Texas. Gary Grant, president of the Black Farmers Association, introduced farmers who gave their testimonials of their experience under the unfair treatment by the U.S. government and the USDA over their lifetimes. One of the more salient points being the over-supervision of loans elicited by field officers of financial institutions of the USDA loan program. Some of the salient points of discussion were Terminator genes by Monsanto and other big agro multinational companies and their global effect on farmers. PhD Dr. Wrigley Muhammad, Minister of Agriculture for the Nation of Islam, also spoke of maintaining independence and not looking to work with or trust the government, as their history spoke for itself when it comes to black people. He also provided a vision of the present with this 1,600-acre farm owned by the Nation of Islam and its successes and challenges going forward. Several other young community farmers provided an insight into urban gardening, farmers markets, as it relates to the economics of farming and food security. Malik Yakini, who operates a 3-acre urban farm in Detroit, also spoke about its challenges and successes. And Ra Ankh Amen from Baltimore, who also operates a community garden with an educational component of a holistic lifestyle. And DC's own Xavier Brown, a master gardener of the Green Scheme in Northeast DC. The overall sentiment at the forum was that of a lack of confidence in the government and the USDA, even at this very late 21st century, and a do-for-self attitude among both farmers, upcoming farmers, and the need to own more land.
Thank you, Michael Byfield, for that report. For more information, contact Mike Stewart at 202-607-0436. That's 202-607-0436 or the BFAA office, that's Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association office, at 252-578-4729 or email bfaausnow@aol.com. That's bfaausnow@aol.com. When we come back, it's all about arts, media activism, Joy Reid's show Gets the Axe at MSNBC, Dori Maynard, fighter for diversity in media, has joined the Ancestors, and Let's Go Beyond the Oscars for Black Film, coming up next.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition, and you just heard what I call the foodie section of It's Love by Jill Scott, something we play for the farmers today. Well, when it comes to the latest in media news as it pertains to issues of diversity, the Journalism's column by Richard Prince is the place to go, and we've been fortunate to have him as a contributor to On the Ground, and he joins us again this morning. Welcome back to the show, Richard.
Well, thank you. Good to be back.
Well, you know, before we start our discussion, I need to remind everyone that this is On the Ground's final day of the winter drive to raise money for a WPFW. I don't see the board moving, Lucy.
I don't see it either.
I see two zeros up there, two donuts. And, you know, we don't roll like that. So we need some love too. Yes, we need some love. We came through the snow and, you know, no gas, but we're here, right? So we need you to go to the phones and call 202-588-9739 or pledge right online at www.wpfw.org. There's a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9739. And
And all of our wonderful friends that pledged before, call up somebody and tell them to tune in to 89.3 FM.
That's right. I didn't want to make a nuisance out of myself. I thought about like sending out like an email blast this morning, like, you know, we're still in the drive, but I didn't want people to start like blocking my email, right? So I didn't do that. So, you know, this is for, it's not for me and Lucy. We're volunteers putting on the best show that we can. It's not for even just on the ground. It's really for WPFW, your listener power station right here in the nation's capital, so that people who are so-called running this country can hear another voice, can hear the people's voice that you power. We don't have commercials. We don't have underwriting. We don't have any of those things. We're not affiliated with the university. We don't have any of those things that other stations have. If you listen to some other stations, you know, after you hear your favorite song, if they play your favorite song, they're going to play five commercials for things that you don't need and you probably shouldn't have, and or, you know, you're going to hear sponsorships on other public radio stations for the military industrial complex or other types of things that we don't accept. So we need you to, this is how public radio works. This is how Pacifica works. And some people are criticizing Pacifica, saying that it's outmoded. But you know, we have to survive. It is vital that Pacifica Radio survive and that WPFW survive here in DC, where people, I was just at the Capitol yesterday and I was you know, really thinking about how I was walking around the halls and how it did not look like America. You know, It did not look, you know, I hadn't been up there in a while. And, you know, we need people power here, and we need people power to make a loud statement. And you can make that statement. You know, you can challenge what is presented on places like Fox News or even other stations that consider themselves more liberal or whatever. They're not always telling us the whole story because they have to worry about those advertisers and what those advertisers want to be said and what they don't want to be said, right? So we don't have to worry about that. This is truly the free press here. So support the free press by going to 202-588-9739. Or 1-800-222-9739, or pledge right online at WPFW.org. Richard, I had to get that in.
Good. Needs to be said.
I had to get that in. But, and you know, I mean, I'm someone who, I've worked in corporate media, you know, and I know it, and I choose to give my time and to community-owned and operated media. 95% of us, maybe more than 95% of us on the air are volunteers, you know, and, you know, we're serving up a good meal, just like Jill Scott was talking about collard greens and black-eyed peas and candy sweets, you know, and this is not fast food media, right? This is a good home-cooked meal from the public, and we need you to support that. Okay.
Right.
All right. So, gosh, there's so many things. We have to catch up on so much, but let's just start with Dori Maynard. You know, she's running the Maynard Institute for Journalism Education that I know supports and is the platform for journalism, column. So why don't we start with her? Tell us about her and her contribution to, you know, really fighting for diversity in media.
Right. Well, Dori Maynard was the daughter of Bob Maynard, who was the first African-American to be the publisher of a mainstream newspaper. And he assembled a multicultural group of folks, he and others, back in 1977 to found the Institute for Journalism Education, which had as its unofficial motto, we want to eliminate from the lexicon, can't find anybody qualified, which was a common theme heard by employers who did not want to hire journalists of color. So they set about training people. They started with reporters at the University of California at Berkeley. Then they went on to editors and then managers. And so Dori grew up around in this environment. And when her father died in 1994, they renamed the institute after him. And his wife also, Nancy Maynard, they carried on, and then Dori ascended to the presidency of the Institute in 2001. And one of the first things she did was, she made sure to get a column like mine in there so that people would have news of what was happening to, people who are not white males in the business. And then she started, she continued the training, but all around the country, that Maynard has a phenomenal number of people who've been through one of those programs, because after all, it's been around since 1977. So she harnessed that energy. She's upgraded to the digital age and tried to train journalists of color to exist in this environment. We've had to fight the diversity fatigue that was brought on by people. You know, after a while, you know how Americans are. They always want something new. So they've had to fight that, and also the recession and the change in what they call legacy media,
right.
from the print media to what's going on online, and equipping, not only equipping journalists to deal with that, but also reinforcing to the mainstream media that even though you're in this recession and diversity has slipped as a priority for you, you need to get back on that rat wagon because the country is changing and we're becoming more brown.
Right.
You need to have those people in your newsrooms gathering the news.
You know, we have a clip of her speaking, making a public address recently. Let's play here a little from Dorie Maynard.
Yes.
I think two of my greatest loves don't love each other. Sometimes I think two of my greatest loves don't even like each other. I'm talking about black men and the news media. Content audits like the one done by the Opportunity Agenda have documented just how little love the news media gives black men, pigeonholing them in stories about crime, sports, and entertainment, making them the face of problems, and rarely including them in stories about science, art, everyday life. And I still love them both. I blame my father because I was a daddy's girl. And my daddy was a journalist. And he taught me from the time I was young that at its best, journalism is a public trust that fuels our democracy because it gives people the information they need to make rational choices about public policy and their private lives. Now, my father was not a naive man, and he understood that his profession, really his calling, he understood that at best it ignored communities of color, and at worst, it misportrayed communities of color. He understood that the distorted and inaccurate depiction of African Americans at conference has caused our society, has sometimes cost them their lives. With eight other journalists named today, and place journalists of color so that the story of our country could also be told through their eyes.
So that was Dorie Maynard, Richard, speaking. You know, I found it very moving to hear her talk about her father and kind of the legacy he left, not only to her, but to the issue of diversity and journalists of color around the country, really. And I'm sure some of that legacy has made its way around the world.
Matter of fact, it's not just African Americans or black men who have this problem of the media depiction.
Right.
I ran an item today about Latino Voices, the editor complaining about this Latino man who was died at the hands of police in the state of Washington, Antonio Zambrano Montes. And he suggests that we've heard about Michael Brown and Eric Garner, but Latinos are not considered in any light other than revolving around immigration. And so when they become victims of police brutality and police violence, there's a big yawn because that just doesn't fit the narrative that people have of Latinos. So the media images of all of our groups need to be challenged and corrected.
Right. And, you know, one thing I can say is that, you know, because I do listen to Pacifica so much, I know that Pacifica and WPFW is one place where we do give kind of equal attention to police abuse of not only African Americans, but Latinos, whites, Asians, anyone who is abused by the police, who's killed by the police under, you know, questionable circumstances. It's something that we are continuing to look at because we care about this as an issue across the board. So,
and they were in a night wolf, would say, and natives as well.
And Native Americans, right. Absolutely. And, right. And so we know that you care about this issue. We know that you appreciate this coverage, not across the board on WPFW, on Democracy Now!, on other parts of our public affairs grid. And, you know, I forgot to mention, you know, there are other thank you gifts we have. We still have that huge Martin Luther King special collection MP3 with the rare recording from London. That's only $100. We have the Joan Hari Chasing the Scream, actually. And when I heard him tell the story about how Billie Holiday was hounded by, you know, federal agents and how they basically, you know, they contributed to her death, really, you know. And this was all around kind of this beginning of this war on drugs that has so targeted and decimated our communities. That package is available for $125. And if you don't have all the money at once, one thing we have that's really special is the Sustainer program. It's really popular and it allows you to just give $10 a month, as little as $5 a month, you know, $20 a month. And it's a little each month, but it adds up so that, you know, by the end of the year, you've given $60 or $120 or $240. And that helps the station sustain itself. And it helps us to, you know, pay the bills. So 202-588-9739. We're still waiting for your call. I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you in Silver Spring and Northwest DC, all cozy, you know, getting that extra bowl of oatmeal this morning. You know, whatever you're doing, I need you to go to the phone at Southeast, Annapolis, Arlington, Alexandria, Bowie.
Esther, I want to put a shout out to those people who benefited from Bob Maynard and Dori Maynard, who may have studied.
Yes.
And may have been one of those news interns. I actually know a couple of them.
Right.
I hope they're listening.
Right.
And call in 202-588-9739.
Or pledge right online. And even if you weren't one of their interns, if you benefited from the overall push for diversity in media, I'm one of those people, you know, I mean, cause, you know, I always say that I kind of got in under the wire before, you know, like the media changed and the internet came and, you know, like they didn't care about having any diversity anymore, you know, or so many media outlets did not care. You know, there was actually a goal, like it was important for the newsrooms to look like America. And that may not be happening right now, but Dori Maynard is one of the people who stayed, you know, on that fight and fought the good fight. And, you know, we all as journalists, you know, people of color, people who are not of color, you know, let's, you know, support her legacy by supporting WPFW and Pacifica Today. 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739 or pledge right online. I want to see that zero go away. Definitely. Okay. So, you know, did you want to add anything more before we?
No, I think we've summed that up. I would just also urge the listeners to just think about all the things they would never have known about had it not been for WPFW,
right?
And let them that drive them to the telephone,
right? And you know, when I go to other places or I talk to friends online or contact people online who don't have a Pacifica radio in their station.
Yeah.
I mean, in their area.
Yeah.
It's such a difference because, you know, I turn them on to maybe Democracy Now! Or I turn them on to this station to listen online and they're hooked on it, you know? So some of those people, actually, if you're listening online and you know you don't have a station in your area, but you're able to tune in to our station or go directly to Democracy Now!, make a pledge. We are totally listener supported. And I guess some people consider us a dinosaur. We're going to have to talk about that next week. There's a new article out kind of criticizing Pacifica and, you know, questioning, you know, our viability. And, you know, these things are coming fast and furious. You know, we're in a war out here for information and minds. And we have to stay ever vigilant and protect this precious community treasure. And you can help us protect it by by calling. I know you're tired of the drive. This is our absolute last week. This is my last week doing the drive. And if you can encourage a friend to join, make a pledge for a friend who can't afford to pledge. And no amount is too small. And we would appreciate that. 202-588-9739. Okay, so Richard, I know we definitely have to touch on the Oscars. you had a column that said it was a racially glib night at the Oscars. I'm still like hearing like Sean Penn like make that statement at the like after the Iñárritu won the Oscar.
Right.
He said something like, who let that undocumented person into the country or something? Or who gave him a green card?
Right.
I mean, it was supposed to be a joke, but it just didn't come off that well.
Right.
Because, you know, he's not like exactly a comedian. So he's looked serious saying
well,
it. So you think
he's supposed to be a friend of that, of the winner. That
right.
Was, like it's sort of an inside joke.
Right.
It misfired.
Right. So, yeah, but anyway, did you have any comments on the Oscars?
Well, I think that the Oscars, what I did in that item was I was quoting a Pulitzer Prize African-American journalist, Wesley Morris,
right,
who now writes for the Grantland site, and he's just such a beautiful writer and writes with insight, and I held him up as an example of the work that black journalists can do. But on the substance, he criticized the whole presentation as sort of patronizing toward African Americans, and a few dog whistles thrown in, even though the people themselves may not have intended that way. But this is just how it came off to him. The problem with the Academy is a lot of other people have said is the makeup of the Academy is skewed toward older white men who are not really in touch with the sensibilities of the rest of America, and that's why you get the nominees that you get and the controversy that resulted. Now, we do have an African-American woman who's now the president of the Academy, and she recognizes this issue as a problem. And as you saw, they tried to compensate for it by having as many black presenters as possible to sort of overshadow the lack of African-American nominees. So there are some sensitivities to the issue, but these things take time. I think you have to wait for these people to die off before you can see some real meaningful change.
Right. And of course, there was the controversy over Selma and no actors, African-American actors being, nominated in the acting categories. And, it was very different than, some of the Oscars we've seen in the past that were more diverse. And, Rich, we have someone to thank. I want to thank, I have two people to thank.
Yeah.
I want to thank Mart from calling from right here in D.C., thank you so much. Thank you. DC is in the house supporting, on the ground, supporting Pacifica this morning. And also want to thank our friend Clyde Kavanaugh pledging again. He's already pledged, and I appreciate him pledging again. And he's going to pick up the African American Historical News Journal, the soft cover edition, and you can do the same. It's a wonderful compilation of articles, actual historical records, reproduced in a really nice journal form. And I think the soft cover is 50, and I think the hard cover may be 89.30 or something like that, 89.3. Mm. And you can do the same as Clyde. You can do the same as Mark by calling 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739, or you can pledge online at WPFW.org. This is our fourth Thursday for On the Ground, which we are trying to devote to arts, media, and activism. And we're talking to Richard Prince, the excellent editor of the Journalisms column at the Maynard Institute for Journalism Education, and that's online at Journalisms. So Richard, you mentioned Grantland, and someone else mentioned it recently too. So,
yeah.
What is Grantland? I looked online. Is it connected to ESPN?
Yes, it is connected to ESPN, and it's a forum for Bill Simmons, who was the editor of it, for long form journalism. In other words, long pieces, not to, and quality long form journalism, as well as some shorter pieces too. about sports and culture. And they've also, now there's a spinoff that is geared toward African Americans that's coming out. Jason Whitlock, the sports columnist, who's now with ESPN, is in charge of that, and he's brought in some other excellent people, and they're going to try to do the same thing geared toward African Americans. And that's going to be interesting. And it's interesting for a number of reasons. One of the main reasons is that the websites that are geared toward African Americans that exist now are basically talking about celebrity gossip.
Right.
And that kind of thing. And there's so much more to being an African American in this country than worrying about, what Drake did.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
But that's what, I mean, this is the same thing that we complain about in the movies, for so many years about being stereotyped. But, we're stereotyping ourselves.
Right.
When we put up these websites that just talk about celebrity news.
Right. And that's something we don't do here at Pacifica. We're really trying to do the real news here. We're trying to give you news you can use. And I so appreciate Martin, so appreciate Clyde. And I need you to, I have about 5 minutes left, and I really want to make my goal. I just need 4 people becoming a sustaining member at $10 a month, really. That's about it. I need 4 people. I mean you. I mean, you're sitting on your hand. This is an easy way to pledge. If you're not a member, if you need to renew your membership, if you know someone else who's not a member and you can call them and get them to join or pledge on their behalf, I need you to go to 202-588-9739 or pledge right online at WPFW.org. We're talking about arts. We're talking about media. And WPFW and Pacifica fit right into that discussion. There aren't many places that are able to speak freely, that can bring you news that doesn't have to be filled with a whole lot of fluff. We don't have to talk about Drake. We don't have to talk about Beyonce. We don't have to talk about, who else, or we don't have to play Pharaoh like 5 times a day. You know what I mean? Because we're not all happy, right? So 202-588-9739. And, when I saw the Oscars, Richard, it reminded me, for much of my career, I've written about movies, and one of the things we're offering is my book, We Gotta Have It, as a thank you gift. But it reminded me that of so many of the movies that we did talk a little bit about last year that, they're just forgotten. There was this awesome documentary on Anita Hill, that came out. And it was a wonderful documentary about to remind us what she went through and really what this country went through during the confirmation of Clarence Thomas, and reminding us of everything that he's done since then, and how we have this person on the Supreme Court who was so controversial and many of us believe so destructive to not only the legacy of African American history, but just in terms of moving the country forward, for all of us.
Yeah.
Yes. And there was also an awesome documentary, Spies of Mississippi, on TV. And there aren't many places where people of color, journalists of color, can have a voice about the media that's talking about our story.
Yeah.
And Pacifica gives us a place to have that opportunity. WPFW gives us a place to have that opportunity. And we know you appreciate that. So I just need 4 more people to step up to the plate. I know you can do it. Maybe you have to wait till you go on your lunch break, but hopefully not. We need you to go to the phones and support on the ground, WPFW and Pacifica, in our final push to basically stay on the air and pay the bills. 202-588-9739. I think we're going to have to start to sign off right now. And I know we have a lot more that we can talk about, Richard, but what we're going to do is, since I'm able to kind of, connect with you again on the air, we can catch up in the coming weeks and continue our culture and media moment, right? Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
And so that will do it for us on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Avera.
And I'm Lucy Murphy.
A special thanks to Michael Byfield for his report on black farmers. And again to Richard Prince of the Journalism's Column. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Nasella. And thank you so much for listening and calling in and continuing to call in. Remember to write the D.C. Public Service Commission about your feelings about Exelon, a nuclear power giant trying to take over our electrical service in D.C. And you can go to powerdc.org for more information. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can listen to all of our shows and past shows, and like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. Now stay tuned for the news, followed by Krista Property on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. Raise your voice, stand by On the Ground, stand by WPFW by calling 202-588-9739. And it will, if you call, it will still count toward our goal, 202-588-9739. Peace.